Hello and welcome to another segment of the CCYSC Awaaz. My name is Kanak. I'm currently pursuing my master's in early childhood care and education from Ambedkar University, Delhi. And I work as an intern with the CCYSC. Today, we are in conversation with Ms. Rabani Garg. Rabani was the founder and the director of the Reading Caterpillar, a children's library based out of Delhi. And she is currently pursuing her PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. We will be talking to Rabani about her experiences as a librarian, storyteller, PhD scholar, and more. So, hi Rabani, how are you? And welcome to our podcast.
Hi Kanak, thank you for having me over.
So Rabani, I would like to begin by talking to you about your work regarding children's literature and starting the Reading Caterpillar Library. How did that come about?
So the library, Reading Caterpillar, I started that in 2009, and it was born out of a need that I felt for, firstly, a library mm-hmm. reading space for young children in the city. Second, mm-hmm. an understanding that public libraries are really nerve centers of learning, and a well-thought of mm-hmm. library programming can offer many different ways for young children to enter into books, whether it's visual or oral, to storytelling or textual, and also I guess finally bringing the reader and makers of children book together. And we were very fortunate that we had a lot of illustrators, authors, and publishers who came in to work very closely with our families and children who were there. And around the same time that I set up the library, the community of Indian children's literature, sort of the publishers and authors mm-hmm. and illustrators, had also started coming together to engage in a conversation around the need to bring books and children together, and also pushing for Indian kid lit, right? So there were lots of festivals, children's festivals, Bookaroo being one which started around 2008-2009. There were also a lot of these publishing houses that came together to bring people who were outside of the school in conversation. So people like me who were in the informal education working with children's literature all became a part of this conversation of the need to place children's literature or sort of push for children's literature made by the Indian being created by the Indian publishing homes. For us, it was a really sort of good time. I guess the timing worked really well. And so for us, what began as a small group of young book lovers, it grew in a community of children, mm-hmm. Parents, caregivers, creators of children's literature, and over 1,000 families have been a part of the library over the years. And personally, I've been working now in this field of children's literature since 2009, first with the library, like I just said, where I was involved both in setting up the physical space as well as creating and mm-hmm. curating a library program, designing reading programs for schools, working as a storyteller, publisher, and editor for children's magazine in India. We did that in 2012 to about 2016. And then I continued to be involved in children's literature and young adult literature at University of Pennsylvania, where along with a team of researchers, we look at books that are published through mm-hmm. the year to make annual recommendations for teachers, families, students, other researchers. And as well as my own sort of virtual Reading Caterpillar community, where I guess the focus really is on being mindful about the complexities and tensions around ideas of diversity, yeah. inclusion, and representation.
That really sounds amazing, Rabani. And I think it sounds like a great experience. And I think moving on from there, but continuing with that same idea of talking about children's literature, you have also worked as a storyteller and you've conducted storytelling sessions. And so I think what I would is, you know, your experiences in working with a mixed age group. Like the other day in our conversation, you were telling me about how you at the library and the library programs, you often used to have a mixed age group. So in those circumstances, how does one conduct sessions which would keep all age groups engaged and prompt, I guess I would say prompt all age groups to be an active participant in the session? So how does one achieve that, I would ask you.
Thank you for the question. That's really interesting because most of my work has been, as a practitioner, has been in intergenerational, especially when you work in out of school spaces. You do get a lot of, you know, we've had families who come together, whether with grandparents, parents, or caregivers, or with siblings. And I guess I would really start here again with thinking of sort of, for me, the main element of any storytelling session is, of course, the stories, right? The stories that we hear and tell, in many ways, shape and define how we relate to ourselves and to one another. So that for me is a starting point of whatever session, you know, whoever is a part of your session, just understanding what's the story that you have to tell. And I guess, again, so even knowing who your audience is and who you're telling your story to and what could be their experiences, right? That's first and foremost. That humanize your experience, stories that can counteract incomplete renderings, stories that offer an alternative to dominant perspectives, and also make space for the audience to bring in their personal narrative to tell one story. And this is here where it's very important when you have an intergenerational audience, your story does allow for everyone to participate, right? Because so you're the story that you choose also allows your audience to bring in their personal narratives. Again, children who were a part of these sessions, stories that allow them to understand who they are and who they can be, stories that they can imagine. And coming back again to like the audience, right? When you have an intergenerational audience, part of it is also your own. So knowing it as a practitioner, as a storyteller in the space, knowing your story really well, doing it with passion, storyteller embodies the story that they tell. So truly feeling it. And again, making a space for shared vulnerabilities, right? Like, so you're offering a space, like I said, where you can call on to people, where you can call on to the grandmother or to the father or to the mother, to the siblings, to be a part of the story. So it's not, you're not talking just to them, you're talking with them, right? And so in an intergenerational setting, that becomes like a really, really beautiful space. Because they can all sort of bring in their own narratives. I guess a storyteller really has to, for me, I particularly was very conscious about making space for everyone to participate in the story.
Yeah, that sounds really, I would say, as someone who would one day like to engage with stories, for me, that is personally on a, personally very I would say helpful. So thank you for that. And keeping on talking about intergenerational spaces, Rabani, I would being in that space, how does one utilize the resources available to us in terms of skills and experiences of the parents and caregivers, as you talked about, as you experienced, telling a story not to them but to them, not with them but with them. So I was thinking of I think even before talking about this question, I think my first question to ask would be how important it is to recognize these experiences as resources which can be and should be utilized in such a space that you used to work in or you have engaged with. So how important it becomes. And then I think my second part of that question would be how to utilize these important resources.
Kanak, thank you again. I think your question is sort of these are the questions that I was asking myself a few years ago. And some of these questions prompted me to study these as a researcher. These were a part of my work in the space. And I think I would like to start with just saying that I started working in the space of children's literature and as a librarian, as a storyteller, as a publisher and editor, not with a background in education. I didn't come in with sort of a master's in education. I came into the field actually like as a novice, as someone who loved books and someone who really loved reading. Other than that, I mean, I had a passion and I would read a lot about it. But a lot of my learning came from working in this community shared space. This recognition that there was so much to be learned from the parents, from the caregivers, from the grandparents who came in how to tell a story and how to work with young children and what they could offer. And recognizing their skills, right? Like recognizing were recognizing the skills that they came in with was a big part of it. So I guess I was thinking of an example I could give here. So in our library, there was a caregiver who would come with this little girl who was an excellent weaver, and she would actually bring her small little, she had this little device where she would weave on or sometimes be embroidering in a corner, and she would never participate in the sessions. Like she would sit in a corner or she would sit outside the library room and stitch stuff, but never participate because she probably didn't see that as her space in the room full of books, or maybe didn't want to be there, or didn't see that adding anything to her, like adding any value to her. But one of these sessions we were working with weaving, the story was around weaving, and I decided to bring some things just to sort of work with fabric and with material, and she saw us struggling and she came in and she was just so absolutely wonderful. She taught us all so much that day, and I guess that was a really important lesson for me as well, to sort of keep my eyes open to like what skills people have, to make space for them, and how do you validate skills that people come in with, right? These are all literacy skills. So when you look beyond just reading and writing, to understand that literacy exists in so many different ways, and just sort of going in as a learner, right? Like understanding that you don't, and I guess for me, because I didn't go in with a background of like, I had no formal training, I also went in, so I'm so grateful for that I went in as a learner. And so I had all of these teaching moments where young children and artists or authors or parents or caregivers who came in could teach me so much, or just in how grandmother said, one of the grandparents said, I could tell a story in Bangla, and why don't you translate it? So I can, and just that sparked a whole series for a full 2-3 years. Every Saturday, we'd have like parents, we requested grandparents to come and tell stories in their language, whatever be their language, and would have someone else translate for the audience. So those things that I now study about were actually things I saw in my practice. So I guess my biggest thing would be to
that, I would, Ravani, really, that sounds like a very, I would say, an important experience. And to, as you say so like beautifully, and I guess we all need to think on it more, of how literacy, as you said, goes beyond reading and writing, and looking at skills as part of literacy. So I think at this, it's also critical, at especially, I guess, I would say, in a country like India, where we have so many first generation learners, so to think, that knowledge or that literacy or language, learning goes beyond books. So that is a very, I would say, important and crucial aspect to our learning. Or by our, I mean, people like me who are in the field, who are currently, in the field of education. So thank you for that, Ravani. And I guess from there, as you were talking about how your experiences led you into becoming a scholar, so that gives me a perfect segue for my next question, which is, you're currently pursuing your PhD. So how did that transition of doctoral research take place? And if you could, talk a little bit about your current research, you know, research or your doctoral program?
Reflecting back onto my practice, there were certain learnings, like I said, that emerged very naturally. So because I was working in an intergenerational setting, I saw families as active supporters of their children's learning. I also felt the need to situate the knowledge that the families came in with, a need for that to be an active part of the work that I do, and I continue to do. I also saw multimodal literacy practices or literacy projects that we did with young children, whether they were art-based or allowed for simple, even sort of a simple cut-based or working with clay or working with things around them or just beyond just the text were very engaging for young children. And the linguistic backgrounds that they came in with were also significant resources for meaning-making, right? And so questions that I came in with earlier, these were really around how sites of informal learning and teaching by people who are not conventionally considered as teachers should be reimagined, right? And extended to places where education really validates a student's social and cultural context of learning. I came in with questions around how curriculum could make in space for students' multiliteracies. Or how young adult children or children's literature, media, and popular discourse represents or erases certain realities and voices. So these are sort of the broader questions that I came in with when I came in to study. Currently, the work I do with young learners is situated in India and focuses on their digital activism, and how their discourses parallel youth movements or expressions around the globe. I am interested in the power structures inherent in language, literature, and media, and its impact on young learners' identity formation. A lot of my research looks at how youth that are marginalized by citizenship status or religion or class, gender, caste, position themselves on and vis-a-vis digital media. And just understanding how these practices really are circulating between formal and informal, school and out of school, both locally and globally. It's still widely situated. My work is broadly situated within children's literature, curriculum design, and informal education.
Thank you, Bhavani, and I wish you all the best for your research and your doctoral study. And we are approaching our last question for the podcast. And since at CCYSC, we are, trying to build this platform for these, South Asian community and going beyond that, finding representation within the South Asian community and going beyond that. So I guess I cannot leave you without asking you your take and your question on the future of South Asian literature. My question is, what is your take on the future of South Asian literature and beyond South Asia itself? So how do you see it and where do you see this South Asian literature going from here?
That's a really, really good question and very, very interesting. And one that I would like to start with questioning and also being mindful of the use of South Asian, these frameworks and different spaces, and who are we centering and or who gets represented when we use this way of framing a region or an experience. So well, the way South Asia, the notion of South Asia is sort of like a product of a variety of global and local political processes and power relation and history. So understanding that it covers India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Nepal, Bhutan. But just really understanding and thinking about who and what gets lost in this framing, what or which story gets told, and who gets to tell these stories, right? Because a lot of my questions are around the way we think of diversity, representation, inclusion. So I'm always mm-hmm. in sort of framing that puts a whole region together. When that comes up, it makes me sort of, it's taking a little bit away from your question, but I feel it's an important mm-hmm. For me at least to talk about this. Having said that, just being mindful of like who are we centering when we're talking about South Asia, I do feel that South Asian literature is definitely seeing more traction, and there is an ever increasing conversation mm-hmm. both in academia and amongst creators of children's and YA literature around the need to have more representation and diversity in literature and situate these texts in classrooms, in curriculum and in libraries, not just for those who've been missing from these stories that are usually told, but also for others to understand each other better. And I guess this is also, at least in the US, being here for the last 4 years, this is something that I've been seeing, that there've been movements like we need diverse books, or hashtags like representation matters, hashtag voices, children's literature. They've really pushed for a need to have books and stories that tell other stories and decenter, you know, in quotes, the single story. And I guess South Asian diasporic community of authors and illustrators are doing some really critical work in this space. And this is South Asian literature sort of situated outside in the US, mm-hmm. Especially in the wake of racial justice efforts, there is a movement to diversify representation in media. So I kind of, you know, I do think that in this, as these conversations take off, South Asian literature will move more than ever beyond South Asia. But all of this, however, needs to be done with an awareness that diverse texts, maybe use the word diverse, mm-hmm. can also be essentializing a culture. And just being mindful of like, who are we making this diverse for? Are these always meant as a narrative mm-hmm. for the world outside? And what are the types of stories you tell? And I guess the last thing, if you have no more questions, one of the things that I would want to situate here again is that the Indian children's publishing houses like Pratham, Katha, Tulika, mm-hmm. Karati, Eklavya, Young Zuban, for example, are creating content that's inclusive, and it's they're engaging in these really wonderful critical conversations. There is definitely a push for, at least in the urban centers, to push for more literature that's being made here and situated within schools. There'll always be questions of access, and I know it's a long road ahead, but there is some incredible work done in this spaces. So I'm really excited to see where it goes. I'm excited for excited to have spaces like this to talk about all of these questions. And I could definitely go on another half an hour about diversity, inclusion, representation another time.
And I think we can definitely keep on listening to you talk about it, being an expert. And so thank you so much, Rabani, for coming on here and talking to us, sharing your experiences. It's been absolutely amazing to talk to you both as I would say, you know, professional in a capacity of an intern here, but also on a very personal level, thinking about the the questions that you have put in my, I would say, you know, brought forward here on this platform, and thinking about them and brainstorming on them. So thank you so much, Rabani, for coming on here and talking to us, and I guess being safe wherever we are right now in this situation of the pandemic.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kanak. It was really wonderful. Thank you for your questions. It made me think a lot, and sort of again, exciting to see that I'm excited about the work that I do, and excited to hear that there are people like you who are so interested in the field. So we should definitely keep the conversation going on. And all the best for the new academic year, I guess.
Yeah, it starts soon. Thank you.